Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
Waters podcast. As it happens right now, it is Friday morning here in America, and I am filming this with my guest across the pond. So if you're listening to this on Saturday, we managed to work out how. I made a mistake here. I'm going to repeat this again, but it's Nick Peters from the Deeper Waters podcast. And right now it's Friday morning, and I'm saying that because our guest across the pond, it's the afternoon where he is, and because that we're going to try and play this back on Saturday, and we hope that works out, but since this is being recorded as a podcast instead of live, we're not going to be taking your calls today, but my guest today is Justin Brierley of the Unbelievable Podcast, and if you don't listen to Unbelievable, I definitely recommend you do so. It's a podcast I try to listen to every week that it comes out. And I'm just thrilled to have Justin Browder here. Justin, are you there?
I am indeed, Nick. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you. It must be different being on the other end of a microphone this time, isn't it?
It is a bit, yeah. But I love your opening theme music. That was very good. And did I detect the voice of a certain Glenn Peoples?
Yes, and he's the one who did the music. We owe him thanks for that. I wrote him out a little script and said, here's what I'd like said, and he did everything from there.
There you go. He's a multi-talented man, isn't he?
Yeah, I just hope that's not giving you any ideas of changing your opening, because yours is too good to change.
Well, that's very kind. I have sometimes thought about changing my opening, you know, bed, as we call it in radio. It just means the thing that goes under the words. But it's kind of stuck. It's a song by a British band called EMF, which was quite popular in the mid-90s, called Unbelievable, hence the name of the show. So I'm keeping it for the moment.
Although I do remember after one show that you did with David Robertson and Gordon, I can't remember last name right now, but I had suggested, well, if you change it, you might want to go with the Weather Girls.
Yeah, because I think that must have been the show where Gordon Livesey, the atheist on that occasion, was saying one of his favourite songs was the Weather Girls' It's Raining Men, which would be an interesting choice, we're sticking with the Unbelievable theme tune.
Well, I know usually on your show you ask people about where they've come from and such. Usually my version of that is to ask my guests why my audience should be listening to them, which includes wanting to know about their faith journey where they're coming from and what work they've done in the projects, what credentials they have, things of that sort. So now it's your turn. Tell us about yourself.
Okay. Well, the radio show's been going, I guess, nearly 8 years now. It'll be 8 years in November. In terms of my credentials, though, I really had none starting the show in terms of apologetics, defending the faith. Only a desire to see the radio station that I work for, Premier Christian Radio, engaging more with non-Christians. We were doing quite well at talking to Christians about Christian things and indeed encouraging Christians in their walk, in their evangelism, but never directly engaging non-Christians. And so it can sometimes feel like a bit of a Christian bubble in that sense.
Yeah.
And I spoke to the station manager and said, I've had this idea for a program where we actually bring on non-Christians and do a kind of discussion And at the time, actually, for the first year or so, it was actually live. We had calls in and that kind of thing. And that's where it all began. And at the time, I was very green in as much as, you know, I didn't really know much about apologetics. I was not well versed in the various arguments and things like that. I'd had some, you know, rudimentary knowledge. I had been a fan of C.S. Lewis in my late teens and read some of his books and so on. But I didn't know what kind of information was out there. And so it was very much a learning on the job experience for me as I brought atheists and skeptics and Muslims and Hindus and others into the studio and invited, you know, did my best to invite people who I thought could respond well to them. And I learnt an awful lot in the process. So after several years, I sort of looking back, I could see that the knowledge I'd acquired now would have made my job much easier to start with in terms of knowing which subjects to pick and the right kind of speakers to have on a given subject and that sort of thing. And so the show certainly grew and was more became more you know, refined and sort of targeted more specifically at particular areas. And indeed, once we started doing it as a podcast, that's really where a lot of the growth was eventually in the program, as well as having the Saturday afternoon slot that it goes out on our radio network. It's also grown a lot as a podcast, many people, both Christians and non-Christians, downloading it, who seem to appreciate a forum for both Christians and non-Christians to chat and have an open dialogue, you know.
And did you, I think I have seen that you do have a degree somewhere now that you've gotten since you've started the show, I'm guessing. Is that correct, or am I mistaken?
No, I got my degree before I began
okay.
on the station, so I was... I went to Oxford University and studied politics, philosophy, and economics. That was before I began a career in radio. So I started up at the radio station about a year after finishing university. In between, I got married, and my wife and I went away to Africa for 8 months and had some adventures there before I came back and started to work for Premier Christian Radio here in the UK. And so that's when my radio career began. I started off very, very minor position, just doing some work experience, really, and having to listen through hours and hours of recorded sermons that we broadcast on the station, because I had to check through them to make sure that they weren't saying anything too heretical that needed, you know, to be edited. So they trusted me a lot with my theological understanding even back then. But over time, I moved on from that into doing some live radio hosting. I co-hosted our breakfast show for a few years with the person who still is the host of that show, but then had the idea of starting my own show and had some different working hours that needed to be worked out because I'd started a family of my own. We'd had our first child, and so I went on to a more part-time basis at the station. And that's evolved over the time that I've been here. I do a lot of interviews besides doing Unbelievable as a weekly radio show. I do some video interviews. I host some conferences that Premier put on through the year. And I also am now employed by Christianity Magazine, which is a sort of Christian magazine that our media group publishes, and so I'm a journalist with them as well, and write for them each month. So yeah, quite a few different strands to the bow, as it were.
And what about your faith journey? Since you asked your guest about this, have you always been a Christian, or were you raised Christian, or what?
Well, I was certainly raised in a Christian family, and I was blessed in that sense to have Christian parents and a Christian upbringing. My parents were both from Christian families themselves, though they certainly didn't have a faith, I would say, at the time of going to university. They both met at Oxford University themselves, but they really had quite a transformative conversion themselves at Oxford University, and that led them into a very strong faith, which so I was raised in a very committed Christian family. I went sort of to church with them, obviously, throughout my childhood. And I'd say I had, you know, a basic belief in God and Jesus, though it certainly wasn't in in a sense, owned by me. I went because they went. And it was really, I'd say, at the age, I think I must have been about 14, when I was attending my church youth group, and we went away on a weekend retreat. And it was over the course of that weekend that God really became real in my life. I sort of had an encounter that I would now describe as a sort of encounter with God, with Jesus, with the Holy Spirit, that really woke me up to the reality of Jesus and his presence in my life. And it really did. That was a turning point. I'm one of those people who can sort of put I can point to a particular moment when I would say that I became a Christian. That for me was that moment. And so for me, that has been the point at which my relationship with God really began. And obviously over the years, you know, my understanding has deepened. Mm-hmm. There are certain areas of theology which I probably didn't even think about when I first became a Christian, which I sort of have developed over time. But I would still go back to that original that original experience as being the thing that started me off, mm-hmm. really, and something that was very important to me, as well as having the intellectual framework, which was something I very much started to investigate once I'd had the experience. The experience itself was certainly a transformational moment in my journey.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've talked a lot about premier, and I'm wondering how many of my American audience, members of my American audience, might be familiar with that. I know on your show you talk about Premier Christian Radio, but when I've checked the site, Premier is more than just radio at the same time, I think. So what exactly is Premier?
I love the way you Americans pronounce it, because here in the UK we call it Premier, and whereas every time I have an American on, they go, Premier. But it's Premier Christian Radio is a radio station here in the UK, and unlike in the US, we don't have lots of Christian radio stations. Premier is a very unusual radio station in that sense, because there's probably only one or two Christian radio stations in the whole of the UK. Mm-hmm. And we've been going since about 1995, but as you rightly mentioned, it's more than just a radio station. It is we call it a media group, because it encompasses also a small TV studio where we can do some filming, and we put those out on our TV channel on online, premier.tv. And we also produce videos, obviously, that go on YouTube and things like that. And then we've got the website, premier.org.uk, plus a couple of other related websites that we run. We also have a number of magazines that get published, and so those would include the one I write for, Christianity Magazine, but also Youth Work Magazine, which is aimed at the Christian youth work market, and is certainly very popular among that. And we've just recently launched a new title called Children's Work, aimed at those working with children at the younger end of the spectrum in churches across the UK. And also a trade magazine called Christian Marketplace, which is aimed at the sort of the booksellers market. And so there's a few different things that we do on that front, as well as also doing other things within our remit, like putting on events. We run a number of conferences each year. We're involved in other Christian events in the country. We also are involved in certain campaigns through the year. We've had a campaign to encourage the government to restrict the ease of access to pornography online in the UK, for instance, is one of the campaigns we've been running recently, and there are all sorts of other ones that we're engaged in. So it's multi-platform, and it's got lots of different sort of elements to what Premier Media Group are doing overall.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to be talking about a conference coming up. Definitely. I'm not sure if you know it, but we had Kurt Jaros was the person I interviewed last week, and I did hear recently on your show your brief little interview with him, and he gave a lot of good plugs for your conference, and we just talked a lot about general apologetics work and such, and I'll be trying hard to say premier. Is that more like it?
More like it, yes. But don't worry, I won't judge you for saying it differently.
Yeah, I can tell you, one thing I personally love about the program is getting to hear the accents from across the pond. I think here in America...
People seem to think that if you have a British accent, you'll somehow sound more intelligent. That's what some of my American listeners tell me, though. I can assure you, it doesn't come across to me that I'm any more intelligent for speaking with a British accent, but I'm very happy for other people to think so.
Mm. Yeah, and I can tell you, I was one of those people who found your show through the Apologetics 315 links while looking one time. Heard an episode, and I think that kind of got me hooked for a while. So, but going back to Premier before that, we were just talking about Unbelievable after break. Did you say it's pretty much the only Christian station out there in the UK, or the major one?
It's one of a couple, basically, and it is probably it's certainly the longest running one. And so, as I say, we don't here in the UK have anything like the church-going population you have in the US, and so there's not so much of a, if you like, market for Christian radio in that sense. There's also the fact that, in a sense, when the BBC was first established, it had a religious ethos to it. In fact, if you go into the main building of the BBC, you can still find on the inscribed on the wall there that this broadcasting house is dedicated to the glory of God, and the person who set it up was a Christian, but obviously over the years, over the decades, the Christian aspect of the BBC has been reduced really to a fairly perfunctory couple of hours on a Sunday, if that.
If I'm remembering correctly, didn't C.S. Lewis read Mere Christianity over the BBC?
Well, that's right. That was obviously in the days when it was really just the radio side of the BBC that was in existence. And yes, before he wrote Mere Christianity, they were a series of radio talks given during the war years.
Yeah.
And so that was the basis from which he then drew the chapters for Mere Christianity. But that very much, the fact that he was on prime time at a time of national crisis, and the response of the BBC was to have someone like Lewis give good reasons for the Christian faith, it kind of tells you how much things have moved on, in a sense. There is still a slot, that you still get, for instance, in the mornings on Radio 4, a Thought of the Day slot, which will be usually a church minister, though it can be someone of another faith, giving some kind of a spiritual message. Tends to be very, if you know what I mean, light in its spiritual depth in that sense. It's not really a place for evangelism in the way that, for instance, Lewis's talks obviously were. But I think what I was getting to really was just that as the BBC's focus on Christianity and religion has faded into the background more and more, so there has been more of a move towards Christianity, religion being, as it were, provided for by independent channels like Premier Christian Radio, So back in the 50s, you might not have felt there was any need for a Christian radio station. You got a certain amount of spiritual input from the national broadcaster, but these days, obviously, many Christians do choose to switch on to something like Premier Christian Radio to receive that kind of input.
Thank God you're all over there. Right now, we are going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to be discussing this further. My guest is Justin Brierley of Unbelievable and Premier Christian Radio, and I'm Nick Peters. We'll be back after this break.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
This is Mike Lacona. Nick Peters is my son-in-law, and I'm excited to announce his new podcast in which Nick will discuss and have guests on topics related to Christian apologetics and dealing with disabilities. Nick has already interviewed apologetic stars such as Greg Kokel and Rob Bowman, and I know of other stars he's in the process of inviting. So be sure to check out Nick's new podcast.
Okay, and I'm Nick Peters. I'm back to the Deeper Waters podcast with Justin Browdy, and I'm sure that that's another voice you recognize pretty easily.
It is indeed, yeah. Great guy. And looking forward, actually, to having him over next year, I think, here in the UK.
Mm.
Yeah, I think that Brian Orton at Apologetics 315 has been looking at setting something up with Mike coming over next year, so I'm looking forward to seeing what could be arranged.
You know, I'd even been thinking of talking to him independently and saying, hey, Mike, you know, Justin does this conference every year. You should really look into getting in on this thing.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows what the future could hold? But I love Mike, and you're really fortunate to have him as a father-in-law. And I think just the work he's done has been so phenomenal. And I guess everyone has their specialities, and that's Mike's speciality. But I don't quite know anyone who's done quite what he's done, and in terms of the time and effort he's put into that specific area of the resurrection, he's pretty much unmatched, I think, in terms of his knowledge and the application of it. So wonderful.
Well, I think if he was here, he'd probably tell you he still bends the knee to Gary Habermas.
Well, Gary has done an awful lot of work too, but I almost see Mike as taking up the baton from Gary and keeping going, so it's good.
It should remind us that we all stand on the shoulders of giants, so if it hadn't been for Gary, there wouldn't have been a Mike.
Well, quite, yes, and I think I remember Mike describing to me when I had him on the radio station in the past, when I had him on my show in the past, how when he was going through a crisis of faith of kinds, Gary was a huge, huge help in helping him to start to work through some of those questions he'd been having about scripture and things like that. So obviously, you can never tell just how big the ripples will go in terms of the things we do for people in that way. It's great to know, though.
Yeah, it could be interesting. So if you want to, you could interview Gary Habermas if he'd be open and see if he'd do a show on doubt sometime.
I think that's a great suggestion, and I think that is an area that lots of Christians probably do need to listen to. I think very often Christians can see doubt as somehow the opposite of faith, or as though doubt is something we're never supposed to experience in life. And I think Gary has written very helpfully in that area.
Oh, yes.
To show that doubt is kind of a regular part of the Christian life, and is sometimes a good thing, even in order to bring us to a better understanding of God, and God can use it in ways that we perhaps don't expect.
Yeah, it kind of makes me think about how you'd said that you brought so many guests on, and if only I knew at the beginning what I know now. And when I heard that, I was having, where when I have some guests on a show, to me in some ways it's kind of like I'm getting my own personal education here each time.
Yeah.
I swear, because you get so many great guests on, you can talk and ask some questions, I mean, write down all these books that they talk about.
it's true, and very much for me, whenever I do a show, I almost always learn something new. And in that sense, I'm very glad to have the experts on, and that it's not me trying to present all these arguments. I'd much rather have someone who has looked into this perhaps a great deal, and then they can bring those findings to the fore. And in the process, I learn a great deal. And I think what I find is that both Christians and atheists appreciate the breadth of what they can pick up in the course of doing that kind of listening to that kind of a show. And even, and we do a number of shows, per year are actually Christians and Christians talking about maybe differences on doctrine or that kind of thing, which kind of falls in the broader apologetic sort of spectrum. because there are issues that Christians want to work out for themselves as they go along that maybe aren't particularly issues that they would discuss with an atheist. But even then, I often get atheists who listen to the show regularly emailing me with their thoughts on that particular issue, you know? because I don't think there's any harm in showing that there is a breadth of interpretation within the Christian church, and that we're not saying we've got it all worked out perfectly, that people do disagree, because that's human nature. And sometimes I think some Christians are a bit worried, you know, you've got this Christian and non-Christian debate show, but when you do the Christian debate, are you kind of making a bad witness to your non-Christian listeners? Well, some people might go away with that impression, but actually I think realistically the impression the non-Christians will go away with is that, Christians have to think through what they believe too, you know, like anyone does. And I don't think that's a bad thing for them to see, necessarily. They seem to quite enjoy it sometimes in the way they pick up information that they maybe didn't realize about before when it comes to Christianity.
And I think most people who are skeptical of that, it's kind of like, you know, they're not going to have a hard time realizing this when they drive down the road and they see the Presbyterian church and the Baptist church and the Methodist church. And it's not really a secret that Christians disagree on some matters, so might as well go out there and just deal with it.
Yeah, exactly. And to be honest, in the age of the internet, you don't have to search very far at all to see that there are different interpretations out there. And I think what is important on that, though, is that when they do come and listen, I would hope that the Christians on my show would be demonstrating that even though they might disagree on a subject, they can do it in grace, and they can do it as Christian brothers or sisters. And because I think that's important, that whatever differences we do have, that the non-Christian would see that this doesn't stop them acting in a Christian way. And I think that's quite an important lesson to draw from it.
Something I've said on this show numerous times, and I'll give an example. The second episode, I talk about Bart Ehrman's book, Apocalyptic Prophet of the New Millennium, about Christ, and know that he never mentioned my view of eschatology, which is Orthodox preterism, in all of that, I wasn't too surprised. I even made a prediction on my Facebook page before I started reading it. I said, I'm getting ready to read this book. Here's my prediction. Turned out to be entirely correct. So the next week, I had Steve Gregg come on, and we talked about preterism some.
Is Steve Gregg from The Narrow Path?
Yes.
Great. He just emailed me this week, actually.
And I know my wife listened to the show, which she usually does, and she's a dispensationalist, and we get along just fine with that. We have disagreements on these issues, and usually if she asks me a question about a viewpoint, she'll say, what would someone from my viewpoint say about this? And I'll try and give the best answer I can instead of one that makes the viewpoint look absolutely ridiculous, because if that's her view, I want her to be as informed on it as possible. And if she comes to mind someday, I want it to be because she got to examine both sides and give each one of them a fair shake and decide, no, I think this one is one that matches up best with Scripture. And that's the exact kind of model we need to have. I've often told people that I'm happy to discuss with you a lot of disagreements that we have until they become a point of we can't fellowship over this one in the Christian body. Because if we can't do that, then it's not worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree more. Yeah, so So it's not just the apologetics in terms of the Christian, non-Christian debates that I've learned from. I've also, in the course of doing the show, certainly my theological views in certain areas have perhaps altered slightly, or I've maybe thought of things in a slightly different way. And there are still grey areas for me, you know, areas where I couldn't tell you I firmly take this line or that line. Because I don't think I haven't sort of probably had all the evidence I need to be able to make a thorough judgment. I mean, obviously, some people sort of ask, you know, you're always so neutral on the show, Justin. What do you actually believe? And the fact is, I am an Orthodox Christian. I am firmly convinced of all the statements of the Apostles' Creed that Jesus Christ was the Son of God. He died and he rose again, and that that everyone who comes to salvation through him. And it is so I'm unashamedly a Christian in that sense. Though I do think there are areas within Christendom which there are, if you like, valid areas of disagreement, and and so I try not to always, you know, I don't tend to let my colours show too much in the areas where there's disagreement between Christians when I have two Christians on, because I want to let them obviously give the arguments, and I don't feel it's my place to sort of weigh in too heavily on one side or the other, but rather to hopefully ask questions of both sides. But, you know, I don't agree with everything every Christian comes on and says on my program, personally. But that's okay. I think it's okay to have a variety of opinion, you know. If I didn't have on my show Christians that I agreed with on every matter, well, I wouldn't ever have any Christians on, because, you know, I'm sure we differ in all kinds of little bits of theology here and there in the end, don't we?
Yeah. And, you know, something I wanted to say about your show is that, this is something Kurt and I were talking about last week, is that when I started listening to the show, I was very surprised to hear this is coming out of the UK and hearing about all the Christians calling in and emailing in and such that were in the UK, because I think usually in America, we can think about the UK as this spiritual wasteland right now that's caught in the mouths of secularism or paganism, and I think it's worse off over there than it is in America, but there are bright lights still shining over there, aren't there?
Yeah, certainly, and I certainly wouldn't want to paint it, even though I said, you know, we don't have as much church going as obviously in the States, that it's all a bleak picture. By no means is that the case. I think obviously there has been a massive decline in church going and sort of Christian culture in the, you know, since, say, you know, you look back to the 19th century. There was, in a sense, in the time of Queen Victoria, a big revival, actually, in many ways, in Christianity in the church. That was when many of our churches all around the country were built. And then you've also got the revivals of Wesley and Whitfield and other evangelists who have had a tremendous impact. But certainly in the 20th century, that has increasingly tapered off. Now, to some extent, I greet some of the kind of church shrinkage that's been going on, because I think always there's this thing that happens when a society has a sort of very strong Christian presence and a lot of Christians in society, that sometimes it just then gets passed on to the next generation and then the generation after that, just by rote rather than by a relationship. And so it's no surprise to me that the church then goes into a period of decline when Christianity becomes a force of habit rather than a habit of the heart, let's say. And so the decline of the church is then, in a sense, a good thing, in the sense that it's pruning off a certain mentality about Christianity. And then what you then see, I think, is finally that people who go to church because they really want to go to church, because they believe in the things that Christianity speaks of. And so I think what we've seen in the last several years is actually a sort of, rather than just a plain decline, we've kind of seen it start to level off. And we've started to see all kinds of exciting new things developing in the Christian church in the UK, new movement, new expressions of church. And I think areas of real vitality. So if you just looked at the statistics, you might think, oh, well, you know, Christianity is in decline in the UK. But you go actually into the beating heart of what's happening in the church, and I think there's an awful lot of good signs and growth signs going on, and stuff that could bear fruit in the future that you might find, you know. I mean, I honestly don't think in the end that the kind of materialist secular culture is actually going to satisfy anyone.
Yeah.
And the church will be there when people start to realize that endless reality TV shows and nice big shopping malls aren't actually the thing that's going to fulfill them in life. And and just the church that I attend, my wife's a minister, is I think just a little example of that, which is when we arrived there, it was certainly, I wouldn't describe it as a growing or particularly vibrant church, but it didn't take long to start to turn things around, and it didn't take that much effort to start to reach out to people who really wanted actually something to live for and a purpose and to find some kind of a community and a place where they would find an ultimate purpose in life. And that I think is the experience of many churches. They're realizing that people coming through the doors who have kind of tried the materialist secular route and have found it very unrewarding. So so there's hope for the UK church yet.
You know, when you start talking about the materialist route not being able to hold, I start remembering Peter Hitchens' book, who's been on your show a number of times, The Rage Against God, and how he talked about the play in Russia of We Can't Go On Living Like This, and how it kind of leaves a vacuum. And then thought about C.S. Lewis, how he was told by some of people of his time that England was descending into paganism, and his response was, one can only hope so, because if someone's a pagan, they're a pre-Christian. If they're a secularist, then they're pretty much post-Christian.
Yeah.
I like what you've said. Sometimes what I've said here is that in America, it might do the church a little bit of good if we had some persecution and such going on to help us realize who's really serious about Christianity, and those of us that are, that we'll start taking it even more seriously than we do. So I guess what you're kind of saying is that while church membership might be lesser in the UK, those that do attend take it far more seriously, most likely, than those of us here in America.
But possibly, yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you have to recognize there's just a different temperament between the British, typical British character and the typical American character. So I'm always very impressed when I do, you know, chat with American Christians, because on average they just seem incredibly lively and energetic and everything, and I sometimes wish, oh, I wish we could capture some of that sometimes, but maybe I'm meeting the kind of the more kind of the more energetic end of the spectrum in my encounters. But I think the UK church always has a lot to learn from the American church, because there are always exciting things going on in certain parts of the church in the States. At the same time, I would say that there are bits of the American church model and Christian culture in the States that I'm kind of glad we don't have here in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And I could probably point to, for instance, the very strong divide that exists in terms of the political and ethical issues and so on in the States, that although I fully understand why Christians and churches tend to, you know, divide and so on over those issues, and there are these so-called culture wars, we seem to have managed to avoid making it a war here in the UK so much, and so there's a little less of a kind of divide. So, for instance, even though we produced Richard Dawkins, I don't tend to find as much of a kind of disdain from atheists here in the UK towards the church as you might find from atheists in America, who very often are feeling like they have been mistreated, sort of a minority who are under threat to or whatever. And just because of the fact that Christianity in the UK just doesn't have that kind of power base, if you like, that the States does, it hasn't come to that. And so actually a lot of non-Christians here in the UK, when Richard Dawkins rails against Christianity, they know that he can't really be talking about the UK church, because the UK church just doesn't have this sort of, you know, influence that he sometimes claims. I think they realize he's often talking about sort of Christianity in the States or something like that. Having said that, there has been a rise in secularism here in the UK, and even as much as I think the UK church really has done very little to kind of deserve any backlash, there's still a certain segment of the secular kind of lobby who would like to take away the few privileges it does still hold on to. So that's kind of my take on the situation.
And my sarcastic, humorous side is now going to say, okay, people, you've heard it here first. Justin Browdy is claiming responsibility for Richard Dawkins.
No, I can't do that. Not possibly.
Okay. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back to continue talking about this. I'm Nick Peters of the Deeper Waters Podcast, and my guest is Justin Browdy of Premier Christian Radio and Unbelievable.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com. Hey, this is Minister Grok. Thanks for listening. Although Grok Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at CYIWorldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And I'm Nick Peters of the Deeper Waters Podcast. My guest is Justin Browdy of Premier Christian Radio and Unbelievable, and we've been talking about the church in the UK and the church in America, and you've been saying that there are some parts of the American church that you're glad you haven't incorporated, and but at the same time, you're talking about meeting these people that are usually pretty lively, and I think the danger is, from what I've seen here in the American church, is we can be very high on passion and very low on content.
Mm-hmm.
But what I've been seeing with what you said is that there was a time when the BBC was thoroughly Christian and such, and something happened in the middle of the 20th century, and I'm kind of thinking that we in the American church, we should learn from you and take that as a warning and say, it's not an entire wasteland or anything over here, but you do have something very good over here. You've got a large Christian population, and you really can do something with it. So take advantage of this and get serious about your faith right now.
Yeah, no, I think absolutely that's right. And some people do say, don't they, that America may be headed in the direction of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't watch out, the Christian church in America is perhaps where Europe was a century ago or something.
Mm.
Though the UK is still a pocket, at least in Europe, of relative, you know, Christian stability at one level. I mean, you've got places like France where I think it's even tougher. You know, there really is a sort of secularism that has been in the majority there for a long time, and so the shoots of church growth in France are even more sort of rare and few and far between. Now, I do know some people doing wonderful work in France. That said, you know, there are some excellent initiatives going on, and there's something called the European Leadership Forum that's going to be happening soon in May, where some excellent speakers, including some guys from America and other folk, come over and speak to some church leaders from all around Europe who attend that week of conferences, and there are certainly some important stuff going on here in the UK in terms of Christian initiatives. I mean, I'm very excited by the work of people like Holy Trinity Brompton in London. Now, not everyone agrees with their emphasis on the Holy Spirit, That's come under scrutiny. If you type it into a Google search, you'll quickly find the detractors on that front. But they have been responsible, whatever you think of their charismatic side of their ministry, for really one of the most successful evangelism courses in the UK and beyond, called the Alpha Course here in the UK, which many churches run, and has been responsible for many people becoming Christians for their introduction to faith. And indeed, they are a very large church, a growing church. They just had their leadership conference where they filled the Albert Hall here in London with Christians, hearing from many different people about Christian leadership. So that's just one example of, an exciting area of the church here in the UK. In fact, our new Archbishop of Canterbury was a member of that church, and comes from a very evangelical background in that sense, and a very exciting sort of spiritually alive kind of context, but also grounded in good theology. So I'm excited for that. There are also some excellent other church networks doing hard work and seeing real fruit here in the UK. Another one I could mention is that sort of caters towards the younger end is Soul Survivor, which is a sort of probably the equivalent of the Passion Conference over in the States, I guess. But they see tens of thousands of young people coming to their sort of weeks of their conference over the summer, and many conversions and so on. What I would say with all of these things is that I would always hope for a bit more often apologetic input, because like in the States, I think there is always a danger in the UK church sometimes of certain churches aiming more for the experience and the passion without it always necessarily being backed up with a rigorous sort of theological outlook and so on, which I think is terribly important to have, you know, to have the balance. I'm not against passion, I'm not against emotion and the work of the Holy Spirit in bringing people to faith, but I'm obviously also very passionate about the fact that we can use our intellect, our reason, to defend this faith, as well as having those sort of sentiments of feeling and so on.
Yeah, and as I was listening, I was just pondering for this. I've got a friend who's studying at the University of Edinburgh over there and working on his THM, and that he's working with some excellent Christian scholars over there that we're greatly influenced by here in America, like Larry Hurtado and Richard Bauckham, and of course, the supreme one I can mainly think of. And when I heard he was going to be on your show, I was just so excited for about the entire week, and I'm sure you know who I'm talking about, and that would be N.T. Wright.
N.T. Wright, yeah.
Yep.
Yes, indeed.
Works are just influencing everyone over here. In fact, I'd say he's the number one reason why my master's is going now towards New Testament, because of everything that he's done. And all of this is supposed to be from the spiritual wasteland, so there is a lot of growth that's still going on in the midst of the darkness. I mean, it could be the general population is asleep at the wheel, but there are bright lights that are
Absolutely.
Up.
Yeah, absolutely. And N.T. Wright, definitely, for me as well, one of those bright lights. I think the Christian church has appreciated not just his scholarly work, but also his incredibly lucid popular works as well. And in that sense, you might want to talk about him in the same sort of context as a C.S. Lewis, in as much as he seems to have managed to do both, you know, to be...
Yeah.
Both an excellent scholar, but also have the ability to bring it down to a very understandable level for the average Christian. And so our church have used, for instance, his For Everyone study material a great deal, which are these essentially just the New Testament books, his own translation of them with a kind of a sort of commentary. Hardly the most inventive thing in the world, you know, that's been done 1,000 times before, but he really does have a way of digging into the text and bringing it to just bringing insights into it that are almost unparalleled in recent scholarship, I think. And so he's been a great gift to the British Church. The problem is you guys in America steal him from us all the time. He's always in America doing conferences and things. So, you know, we only get to see him half the year, but it was great to have him on the show. Someone I've long wanted to have on, and in that sense, someone I have asked a few times if they could come to Unbelievable the conference. It just hasn't worked out, but we'll get him at some point.
Yeah, and I'll be going ballistic with excitement if he ever comes on this show.
Well, you know that show I did with him, with him and James White, having the debate on justification. I mean, I have to confess, I was having trouble keeping up, because obviously when you've got someone like James White who really knows their stuff, and N.T. Wright who really knows their stuff, they immediately go to a level of scholarly interaction which can leave me, a mere mortal, sort of swimming in the shallow end, just trying to keep their head above water. But I think it was just exciting to see that happen. I mean, I think that's one of the beauties of the show, is that there aren't that many opportunities you'd get in a radio context to have that kind of a level of engagement between two people who are obviously so engaged with their subject. And so it was real fun to have him on for that. I'd like to get him on with a non-Christian as well, though, at some point.
Yes.
I think that would be really interesting, too.
Maybe it'd be interesting to have him and Marcus Borg together, since they've written a book together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that would be an excellent match, actually, to talk about that. I think there are many subjects it would be really interesting to hear his thoughts on, but particularly, obviously, the historical Jesus has been such a key part of his writing that I think that would be an excellent one to set up, if it's at all possible.
And also, like, keep in mind when talking about what's going on in the UK, that recently you all had, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, but you had the Reasonable Faith tour that swept across England.
That's right, yeah, that was, believe it or not, that was over a year and a half ago now, in 2011, and that was a wonderful time when we were able to welcome William Lane Craig over to the UK. He'd been here a few years previously, but this was really more of a joint effort at doing something across a few different Christian organizations to bring him out. And even in those few years since he'd last visited the UK, I think his the level of recognition had gone up a great deal, just because of you know, in a few years, YouTube and social media and so on had advanced to the point where more and more people were coming across him. If you are looking for evidence and Christian arguments and apologetics, it won't be long before William Lane Craig comes up at some level.
Yeah.
And so it was exciting to have him over. We obviously did a number of debates. I hosted the first one in London. He did some lectures as well. I think in total, over the course of all the events, you know, some 8,000 people attended. And although that may not be big shakes to some extent in some parts of the States, where, you know, you can get people, the number of people in a church that big, you know, on a Sunday. But here in the UK, for a kind of person coming and doing public kind of debates and things like that, and getting the mixture of Christians and non-Christians coming along, that really was a superb result for us. And obviously, the beauty of the internet and YouTube is that thousands more can see it afterwards once you put it online. So we were thrilled at that. He had some very substantive debates while he was over. I think a lot of people I spoke to who perhaps had never heard of him before he came, it opened their eyes to the fact that Christianity has this strong intellectual strain to it. And even if you don't agree with everything he said, or all his arguments, you can't deny that there is a real intellectual sort of credibility to Christianity. There's stuff worth discussing, and I think that's, even that alone is helpful very often, especially for non-Christians to see that this isn't just, you know, fairy tales and you know, made up stuff. There's some real intellectual arguments that you can put forward to make a case for Christianity. It was a very exciting time as well, because we were trying to do things to raise awareness, obviously, and you may remember there was a sort of a bit of a story we were sort of telling at the time about Richard Dawkins. He'd been invited to debate with William Lane Craig while he was here, and he had refused and ended up giving a whole range of different excuses for why he wouldn't debate with Craig, and so we ran a bus campaign in Oxford that kind of mimicked a campaign that the British Humanist Association had done a year or two before. They had run a bus campaign that went, "There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life." And so we ran a campaign that said, "There's probably no Dawkins. So stop worrying and come and enjoy William Lane Craig at the Sheldonian Theatre in Oxford," which had some media attention, and Dawkins himself ended up writing for The Guardian a response at the time, which was another excuse for why he wouldn't debate. But in any case, it certainly meant that it got quite wide exposure at the time of the the tour, and it was an exciting time.
Yeah, my sarcastic side before you mentioned it was, just chum a bit, say, "And yeah, and didn't William Lane Craig have an excellent debate with Richard Dawkins?" I was a bit, "Oh wait, that didn't happen." Especially in the fact that recently there was a publication online somewhere that named Richard Dawkins the world's greatest intellectual, which kind of leaves wondering, what does it mean when the world's greatest intellectual is afraid to debate William Lane Craig?
Yeah, quite. And so we had this symbolic empty chair in the end at the Sheldonian Theatre in Oxford, and he did, Craig did interact at that event with some non-Christians who were kind of formed a panel to sort of have responses to his lecture and so on. But it still would have been great fun, wouldn't it, if Dawkins had turned up on the night and taken up the challenge, but he didn't. But there you go.
And that empty chair, I'm guessing, was courtesy of Peter Byram, wasn't it?
Well, yes, Peter Byram, who's a great friend of the show, and really became a Christian officially during the time that Bill was over, actually, because he'd sort of been on a journey from atheism through to realizing maybe there was more to it than meet the eye, and became a sort of agnostic and then became a Christian. But he was very instrumental in a sort of little video campaign around the theme of the empty chair, which was a motif that we struck on and sort of stuck as well. I hear that Clint Eastwood then ripped off our idea later on in the States and started talking to an empty chair as though it was Barack Obama, but that's another story.
Yeah, we were watching that night and thoroughly enjoyed that broadcast. But I was even at the conference at SES, and they played some clips of Frank Turek talking to William Lane Craig about how things went in the UK. And it's so great to hear that when that kind of event happens, that people actually fear the churches. And Lee Strobar was here in Knoxville recently and talked about how he had a debate between William Lane Craig and Frank Zindler, and people ran into the church. He said, "When was the last time you saw people running into the church?"
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think, in a way, it's something I want to do more of in the public ministry of Unbelievable, is do more in the line of debates, because while I always think there will be a value to apologetics conferences, I think what we do on the show in terms of debates and discussion is also very appealing in that live context.
Yeah,
people want to because that is, people want to hear both sides of an argument, don't they? And so it's a perfect forum for doing that. We enjoy putting those kinds of things on. I enjoy the fact that you then get to interact with non-Christians, and it's a way of bringing them into the fold of talking about these ideas. So plans are that we will do more of that kind of thing in the future.
where we've talked about Unbelievable Son. When we come back from our next break, I'd really like us to dive into Unbelievable and hear what it's all about. So we'll be back to talk about Unbelievable after this break.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at CYIWorldwide.com.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. At www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
And I'm Nick Peters. We're back with Justin Brierley of Premier Christian Radio and Unbelievable. Now, we've been talking about Unbelievable some, but we've never really hit on what it is. So can you tell us what exactly is Unbelievable for my listeners who don't know?
Okay, well, I'm glad you asked. It's a weekly radio show and podcast broadcasting on Premier Christian Radio and across the world on the internet. And I'm joined normally each week by a Christian and a non-Christian for some debate on some aspect of faith or belief. As I mentioned, sometimes it's more of an inter-Christian discussion. But the core of the show really is to make a defense of Christianity by having an open dialogue on a particular issue. Mm-hmm. And so those can range across science and faith, scripture, theology, ethics, all kinds of areas that we've covered over the years. And so I present the show. I'm there as the moderator. It's pre-recorded, so my guests come in and we discuss, and that then goes out as the show on Saturday and usually gets uploaded over the weekend as the podcast too. And as I mentioned, really the podcast has taken off in a big way in the last several years, and I've been introduced and had the pleasure of knowing all kinds of people. People like you, Nick, from all around the world who now listen. It's quite possible we actually get more listens from the States than I do here in the UK, actually. So many people seem to email me from the States. So, and very often people seem to be saying, you know, I wish we had something like this here in the United States.
Yep.
Because because these discussions can sometimes be a bit more polarized and a bit heated, the media in the States tends to be, you know, you get two extremes and maybe only a few minutes, and you maybe get more heat than light out of that. We've got the luxury on this program of usually at least an hour in which the two views will be discussed, and we try to make it civil, but obviously people are able to speak their mind and to put the strong case forward. Sometimes the shows can be quite feisty, you know. There can be some pretty outspoken people who come on from time to time. I had an email today from someone who was listening to a show from a few years ago. I don't know if you remember this one, Nick, when we had a guy called B Strong on. Do you remember B Strong?
I would love to wipe my mind of that one.
Sorry to remind you of it, yeah. Who was an interesting character. Someone who denies a kind of Jesus mythicist, though, writing in a fairly vernacular style, let's say, on that. He was quite a character. you'd have to listen to get what I mean. But equally, last year there was a show which was very heated. I had on a Muslim guest in the studio, Robert Spencer, yeah, and they were talking about Robert Spencer's new book, which claimed, which questioned whether Muhammad existed. And that was, obviously, it's just to many people, it's a bit of a far-fetched theory, but I thought, well, it's an interesting theory and one that I think we could have an interesting show on. What I wasn't anticipating was just how heated their exchanges would become. It was one of those ones where even though Robert Spencer was on the line from the States, I struggled to control the two guests because they were really going for each other. And that's sometimes true generally of some of the Muslim Christian dialogues, depending on the person you have in, obviously. But yeah. Perhaps it's a cultural temperament thing, but they can be prone to be, those kinds of shows can be prone to being a little bit more heated than the average Christian atheist dialogue, let's say.
Yeah. Now, you've said the podcast has caught on very well for my listeners. Where can they find your podcast?
Well, the easiest place to go is probably the show webpage, which is at premier.org.uk/unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And that's got links there to the iTunes account, to the RSS feed, and so on. Also, you can just search there for various topics. There's a sort of topic archive, so you can look through the different types of things we've got there, and also links there to other resources and things like that connected to the show. So that's the easiest place to go, is just go to the website premier.org.uk/unbelievable.
And we played the Mike Lacona promo here. He's been on the show a number of times. And, in fact, for my listeners out there who are wondering, yours truly has been on the show before as well.
Yes, yes. It was a while ago now, but yes, I do remember it. And it was on the subject of... It was shortly after, I seem to remember, the Haiti earthquake, wasn't it? And
January 30th, 2010, I think.
Oh, you've got a good memory. And we were talking about, where was God in Haiti? Mm-hmm. Talking about the problem of evil,
yep.
Problem of suffering. And you kindly came on the phone to give your experience and to give your perspective, which was quite different, actually, in a way, to the other Christian guest I had on in the studio, who on that occasion was Roger Forster, who took a bit of a different approach to the whole issue, to your one. And so I was really glad to have you there to give that your perspective on it as well. And that was with an atheist who has appeared occasionally on the show. Haven't had him on in a little while, but a guy called Gordon Livesey.
We've mentioned him, in fact, earlier.
We did. Yes, that's right. And Gordon's a lovely guy, just someone who I can't quite remember how I got around to getting him on the show, what exactly the connection was, but he's the sort of person who is by no means a sort of professional atheist in the manner of a Sam Harris or someone like that, but is an atheist and sort of, you know, has reasons for why they don't believe and is willing to come on and talk about it. But what did you think of that after you'd been on? Was it a good experience, Nick, overall?
Oh, yes, it was one of the best experiences. The only downside was that you said I was willing to come on. That's because I woke up at 5:30 in the morning that day just so I could be on the air. I didn't even have breakfast before I got on, I don't think. And I had to go to work. I was working at CRI at the time, which left me saying that, we debate more atheists by 9 a.m. than most people do all day. Given idea of how it was, I later played it back for my family, and you know that I came on that show just after I had got engaged, and so later on that year I got married, and there was an annual get-together that the Laconas and Habermasses have, and when I came in, I played it for Mike and his wife, and they commented on, they critiqued me and such, and I played it for Gary, and I had to say, I was kind of getting a little bit nervous with Mike and Gary both, because I think both of them were taking notes during the debate, listening to it, and I was kind of thinking, okay, now I'm about to find out how bad I really did. No, you did fine, and it was great. You know, I think you'd gotten used to kind of reading my emails after pretty much every show, which since I got married, my input kind of went down a little bit because you had to focus up, but I've still made a point, listen to Unbelievable every episode. Don't care who's on, listen anyway.
Well, I really appreciate that. That's great loyalty, Nick, to the program, and I hope you don't too often feel like throwing your radio or whatever you're listening to across the room. Sometimes I know that the Christian or the atheist guest or whoever can sometimes, if they say something and you think, oh, you did that wrong, or you haven't said the right thing, it can be a frustrating experience for the listener but it's surprising when you come on, you know, it's not as easy as you think sometimes to think on your feet and come up with just that. You know, I've had so many guests, both Christians and atheists, who after the show have said, oh, I wish I'd said, why didn't I, you know, sort of thing. So it's not easy. That's the nature of a kind of a live discussion, though.
And it doesn't matter if it's me or anyone else. I think you can assure listeners here that even the best scholars on the field say that kind of thing after a debate.
Absolutely. And what I think doing the show has taught me is that sometimes those who are excellent in print, who are just, you know, brilliant scholars, brilliant arguments, they're not necessarily the best people to actually bring on a kind of live discussion debate type scenario. Now, some people have both abilities. People like William Lane Craig are excellent writers in print, but also extraordinarily good at doing debates and things like that. There are others who just aren't suited to doing a sort of a live debate type of scenario. And so there's been one or two occasions when I've realized after having someone on, while they come across brilliantly in their book, maybe it wasn't the right forum for them on a radio, you know, in a sort of live discussion context. And you just live and learn with that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then I discover people who perhaps are relatively unknown in the wider context, but who are just excellent communicators in this kind of context. So I think of people like David Robertson, who I think you're a big fan of, Nick, but is sort of someone who has a little bit of, you know, a following. He wrote a book called The Dawkins Letters, which was sold quite well here in the UK. But Dave, what makes David such a good guest to have on is that although he often, you know, some people just disagree with him so much, he's got a manner of he's got a way of being very engaging, putting things across in a very easy to understand, straightforward way, and he's very quick at sort of engaging and coming back on things and that sort of thing, and so he's just always good value for having a discussion. He would himself admit that he's no super apologist in terms of, you know, having an in-depth knowledge of all the different areas you might want to think of, but he's got enough knowledge to be able to engage with the average atheist, you know, and some of the, certainly all of the typical objections people bring to Christianity. And so he's the kind of person that I think you need to have in the radio context sometimes, to sort of bring that sort of down to earth, straightforward, you know, straight talking, a kind of apologetic approach to these subjects.
Yeah, he's another guest I'd love to have on here sometime. And whenever I've heard he's going to be the next guest on the show, I usually like say, well, I can rest easy this time. I know he's not going to bring a Christian or he's going to screw things up too much. And I do
That's
like
right.
also
yeah.
to say that you get people that are unknown, because you also do bring in people who just want to volunteer and such, which is how I got on the show one time, which... I remember you listening. You said, I'm always looking for people who are just willing to throw their hand in the ring and step in. And I said, wrote you an email. I said, well, Justin, I've commented several times. Why not have me come on there and just do a full debate sometime? And okay, let's do it. And now with your Greer Christian going on, you've had some guests show up that might talk for 10 or 15 minutes and move on to the next one. And I think it gives everyone great exposure.
Yeah, I think so. And, the idea with the Guerrilla Christian format is I was finding a lot of, you know, quite a few atheist and non-Christian listeners who were interested in maybe contributing, but maybe it wouldn't have made sense to bring them on for a whole show or something like that. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it's a quicker and easier kind of show format to arrange in many ways, where you just have maybe a Christian guest who, you know, kind of can speak to a variety of issues, and you just then say, well, who wants to have a go at interacting with them? And there's usually no shortage of volunteers who'd like to have a crack at it. You have to be ready to be concise and put your points across, you know, fairly cogently. And I think some people do realize pretty quickly that with only 10 or 15 minutes, you've got to make your case fairly briefly and so on, because that's not a lot of time to get into the issues.
Yeah, usually I've found if I have to do something like that somewhere brief, I'll give an answer and I'll say, and here's a good book that I recommend on a topic, since you can't say it all, you can point people to another resource and so on. And usually when I'm listening, I listen on my phone to the show, and I'm usually doing something else, like either driving somewhere or maybe playing a game or something that I can do. And usually when I'm playing a game, it can be like, okay, now I'm really going to go right on in this bad right now, because I'm just really ticked at what this guest is saying right here. So maybe you're responsible for some of my greatest gaming successes as well.
Maybe. And I know other guests other listeners who listen on the running machine and have said, I nearly fell off the running machine when so-and-so said this or whatever. You know, it's quite funny, really, yeah.
It seems like the response has been very good, unbelievable. Was there skepticism when you presented the idea?
Yeah. I mean, not so much from the boss here. He was happy to give it a go. It was more from some of our regular Christian listeners to the radio station, who perhaps, you know, for good reason asked, well, there are plenty of opportunities for atheists to speak on all the other broadcast media channels. Why would you want to bring atheists onto a Christian radio station? And I can see their point.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned, for me, Christianity has to engage. And, you know, I wanted to show that the Christians have nothing to fear when it comes to engaging objections to faith. Now, the problem is that some Christians just don't like the idea at all, you know, and some Christians, I think, are of a bit of a mentality of, I'm not going to engage with that world. I'm going to just sit here in my bubble and not have to think about those kind of hard questions. But I think then you're going to be missing out on a whole number of Christians who actually do need to hear those kinds of issues debated, who are presented with friends and others and questions in their own head that give them pause for thought, or, you know, might be a stumbling block in their faith. And so over the years, essentially what's happened is that the regular listeners who know now that Unbelievable is just a core, you know, stable part of the weekly sort of broadcast here on Premier Radio, they know that if they don't like it, they'll just stop listening for an hour and a half, you know, and then switch back on. And in the meantime, there are others for whom they know that they want to tune in at that time of the week, because that's they know they're going to hear something that's going to make them think and is going to be helpful in some way. And I've had so many emails over the years from Christians, both listening via the radio and on the podcast, who have said, this show has really helped me to think through my faith. I was, you know, emails from people who say, you know, I was really struggling with this question or that question or whatever, and your show has really been helped me to hold on to you know, a real intellectually credible faith. And and it's not as though, you know, every episode the non-Christian gets smashed out of the ballpark and the Christian rides around victorious or anything. Of course it's not, because that's not the way open discussion happens. You know, both sides land punches, and both sides, you know, have good points in their favor. But what I would hope, at least, is that anyone, whether they be Christian or non-Christian, who listens to at least a few episodes of those kinds of programs of Unbelievable, that they certainly, hopefully, wouldn't be able to go away and say, well, Christianity really is just for ignoramuses, isn't it? Because whether or not you believe that the Christian won or didn't win or whatever, I think what you will go away with is the fact that, there's more to this than I thought, maybe. There's stuff worth investigating here. And often, of course, the radio show will only be the start of someone's investigation into some of these questions. But I firmly believe, however well we do or don't present that defense on the show, there are good answers to all the objections to Christianity. And for many people, that has been the route by which they've come to those answers, and they've been able to say, yes, I have been strengthened in my faith because of this program. And equally, there are atheists who get in touch who say, well, I've got more respect now for Christianity than I had. There are also atheists who get in touch and say, I'm more convinced than ever that Christianity is wrong because of your program. But that's just life, you know.
Yep.
Some people will have one reaction, others will have another reaction, and I'm just here to say, well, I'm trying to do what I do, what I feel I'm called to do, and I'll leave the rest to God, you know.
In the past couple of years, you've gone beyond just having a radio show, and we're going to be talking about it when we come back from our break. I'm Nick Peters of Deeper Waters Podcast, and my guest is Justin Browdy of Premier Christian Radio and Unbelievable.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com. Home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok? Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grok as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told. Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out CYIWorldwide.com.
I'm Nick Peters of the Deeper Waters Podcast. My guest is Justin Browdy from Premier Christian Radio of the show Unbelievable. Now, we've talked about the show, but in the past couple of years, you've gone beyond a show, and that's about to take place again next week, isn't it?
That's right, yes. So this is our third year running Unbelievable, the conference, which is really just a day of teaching on various apologetic issues. So it's aimed primarily at Christians, and the idea is that you come along and you'll get a choice of different seminars. You go to the ones which kind of meet your needs, the questions you'd like answers to, the areas that you'd like to learn more about how to engage a skeptical world today with the truth of Christianity. And so we started off in 2011. One of the main guests we had then was, you know, David Robertson, who we've already mentioned, but we also had John Lennox, who's well-known really on both sides of the pond in terms of Christian apologetics, plus a number of other guests, and we followed that up the following year, this time a little bit bigger, and we also were pleased to be able to partner for the first time with Reasons to Believe, who provided a couple of our speakers for last year's conference, Hugh Ross and Ken Samples. And this year, yeah, we're again partnering with Reasons to Believe, but also a couple of other organizations, Real Clear Apologetics, Kurt Jaros you had on last week, as you said, and also another sort of organization doing work in the area of Christianity and science and education, RE Today Services, are helping to sponsor the conference this year. So we're excited to be putting it on again. We'll probably have more people than we've ever had before at the conference this year. And just I think, good signs that Christians are waking up to the need for apologetics in their churches. I increasingly am meeting people who are realizing the need for good answers, people who want to find out more. And so I'm hoping that the conference, the show, and everything else is just part of a wider movement, hopefully, that we're helping to encourage in getting churches and Christians engaged in, you know, making a defense of their faith. I'm always surprised sometimes at how even fairly well-known Christians can still be reasonably uneducated on some of the really good arguments out there for the existence of God, for the reliability of Scripture, and that kind of thing. And you don't have to become an expert to be able to effectively use some of the arguments that exist. And that's what it's really for. It's for normal Christians. It's you go and hear experts, but what you will pick up are practical sort of tips on how you can make the case for Christ or for God or for faith to another person. And we've just had really great feedback every year that we've done it. People really enthusiastic about it, realizing that there's really good reasons for belief and wanting to go and, you know, do stuff in their church that reflects that. And so we're very thrilled to be welcoming Alistair McGrath this year,
mm-hmm.
who's one of our main guests. Amy Orr Ewing is an excellent evangelist and apologist as well from the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics. She'll be here. Peter S. Williams is a Christian philosopher. Will be contributing. Dr. Trevor Stammers is part of the Christian Medical Fellowship. He's going to be leading a seminar on abortion. Mm-hmm. Kurt Jaros, who we've mentioned, and Fuz Rana of Reasons to Believe is going to be there as well, talking on science and Christianity. And so there's a range of seminars mm-hmm. across the day you can choose from, and lots of opportunity to ask questions and so on. Also just a place to network with other Christians who share a similar passion for evidence and evangelism and so on, and that's part of the beauty of it. It's a good place to going online obviously is a great way of picking up information and knowledge about Christian apologetics, but I still think the live event, the interaction, kind of feeling encouraged and inspired by other Christians who are joining with you in this endeavor, there's a real place for that, and that's the reason I put it on, because I feel like the church needs to be encouraged to see that there are really good answers to some of the objections that we hear so often in the media from prominent atheists like Richard Dawkins.
And coincidentally, these main speakers that you've mentioned have just happened to recently be guests on Unbelievable as well.
Yeah, it's a funny coincidence how just before the conference they suddenly all pop up on my show. It probably doesn't take rocket science to realize that was intentional on my part to bring them on in connection with the conference and to obviously lend some publicity for that. So, yes, we've had a couple of really interesting episodes with Fuz Rana on the origin of life, which I think he's just done a debate with Michael Ruse on, hasn't he, in California?
He did do a debate with someone, I saw, and I know on tomorrow's show, he's supposed to be with Peter Enns and someone else discussing on if Adam was a historical person.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so the Saturday show this weekend is all about whether there's a historical Adam and Eve. In fact, just as I've been talking to you, I've just been writing up some of the details for that for the podcast. But he's contributed alongside Peter Enns, who's an American theologian who takes a very sort of I don't know what you describe his view as. He's a theistic evolutionist and published a book called The Evolution of Adam last year, arguing for quite a different interpretation of the Genesis story, actually. And the other guest is Dennis Alexander, who's the emeritus professor, emeritus director of the Faraday Institute in Cambridge. That's an institute looking at the relationship between religion and science. And so Dennis and Peter both very much on the theistic evolution end of the spectrum. Fuzz, an old earth creationist, he argues more for a special creation of Adam and Eve, both theologically and scientifically. He thinks there's good evidence for that. And so all three of them, though, have different positions, and that's what's interesting on the show to hear that. I know I'm going to come in for some flack for not having a young earth creationist on as well, but sometimes you can only have so many points of view before you sort of you lose the focus, because no one would really get to speak for very long.
Yeah, and it also wasn't a coincidence on this end that we happened to have Kurt Jaros on last week, and we're having you on because I'm really wanting to promote what you're doing in the UK as well. Now, what I've been told also is that your conference is the only apologetics conference in the UK.
Well, it's probably not quite the only apologetics conference. It's the only of its kind, I guess. There are sort of day sort of teaching seminars that do exist in other parts of the UK. Indeed, you could, for instance, David Robertson, who we've already mentioned, runs the SOLAS Centre up in Dundee, and they've been putting on a conference each year. which has a bit of a slightly different dynamic to it. It's not an apologetics conference per se, though that is certainly a large theme in it. It's also a sort of church conference as well, the SOLAS conference. But the Oxford Centre for Christian Apologetics have also done some excellent work putting on things in the year that you can hear a speaker at, like John Lennox or Alistair McGrath. I think what Unbelievable is the only conference which sort of is really a day conference with a kind of, if you like, a variety of seminars that you could choose from, and probably has a little bit more mass appeal than some of the others, which can inevitably tend to be more localized and more sort of tending to be attended by Christians who are already engaged in that field. I think the advantage of doing this as a premier radio conference is that we draw from quite a wide audience of the Christian church, because of the audience who listen to the radio station, as well as obviously because of the podcast and so on, people who are already engaged in apologetics who want to come along as well. And so it's got quite a wide broad base of appeal, and so for me, you look at the people attending the conference and you will see a real range of ethnicity. You will find more men than women. I think that's partly because of the nature of apologetics seems to appeal more to men, which was a bit of an eye-opener for us here at Premier, because almost all our conferences are, in the large majority, attended by women. And when we put on Unbelievable, the conference, we had mainly men attending. Which I think that, you know, it is an interesting thing. It suggests that sometimes if you want to engage men in your church, then do some apologetics, you know, and you might find that you'll quickly find that they're interested and engaged in the kinds of questions that brings up.
Now, this year, the conference is focusing on the work of C.S. Lewis, isn't it?
Yes, partly. And so the conference title is Jesus, Liar, Lunatic, Legend, or Lord. That, of course, is riffing on Lewis's famous trilemma, but adding an extra category of whether Jesus was a legend. And so Amy or Ewing specifically will be addressing that. This year is the 50th anniversary since the death of C.S. Lewis. And so I wanted that reflected at some level in the conference. And so it seemed appropriate to give that title, so we could talk about Jesus, but we could also talk about C.S. Lewis. And so one of the seminar streams specifically deals with the impact and legacy of C.S. Lewis in terms of Christian thinking. And I'm sure, like in the States, many people here in the UK have had some kind of part of their Christian journey has been informed by reading C.S. Lewis, whether it be his children's stories or his adult literature. And so if there was ever a year to do something related to C.S. Lewis, this was the year to do it, this 50th year anniversary. And I'm looking forward to that. We've got three topics that we're going to be discussing in that particular stream of the conference. We're going to be looking at C.S. Lewis and the New Atheists, and that's Peter S. Williams presenting that seminar. He has a book out called C.S. Lewis and the New Atheists, and really looking at how Lewis's arguments and his apologetic still is answering the same questions today that he was answering back then, and almost imagining what Lewis would say now to a Richard Dawkins or a Christopher Hitchens or a Sam Harris. Then we've got C.S. Lewis and the imagination. Can we make apologetics more imaginative? And that's going to be Alistair McGrath really looking at the way Lewis managed to not just make arguments for Christianity, but also did it in such an engaging, creative way. And talking about how we can also benefit from that legacy, how we can do apologetics in a way that isn't just about sterile arguments and ivory towers, but is really engaging people where they are. And so that's good. And then Amy or Ewing is going to be speaking on the problem of pain, drawing on what Lewis wrote, both in his book, The Problem of Pain, but also A Grief Observed, which are sort of bookend his life, really, as a Christian. The Problem of Pain was probably his first major, a popular apologetic work. And it was interesting when I had Alistair McGrath on the program, he sort of talked about the fact that in many ways, A Grief Observed, which was published under a pen name after the death of his wife, Joy, was in some ways the experiential issue being addressed, whereas the Problem of Pain was more addressing the intellectual case. And so Amy will be addressing that question from that perspective, and it is probably the most common question that Christians will run into from people who are struggling with their faith or don't have faith. You know, why does God allow suffering? So so I think it's always almost quite important to always include at some level in a conference like this to allow that question to be addressed, because I think it's such a common question, you have to give people the tools to answer it.
Yeah, we are going to be having some guests on here sometime in the future to talk about the problem of evil as well. But it definitely is the biggest one, I think, not because it's such an intellectual stumper. Honestly, I don't think it is, but it's the emotionally, experientially gripping question. That you can't, so many people can't just think about the question, they feel the question at the same time.
Exactly. And I remember you actually responding to, this was going back a while now, but we did a show on this when we had Bart Ehrman on with Richard Swinburne.
Mm-hmm.
And they were debating the issue. And it was interesting to me that Bart Ehrman, who had written a book at the time called God's Problem, basically on the question of whether the Bible has a sort of answer to the problem of suffering. And he really disliked the way Swinburne took essentially a very logical, philosophical approach to the problem, you know, made his theodicy in terms of the idea that suffering may be used in a way to bring the full humanity out of people, the sort of soul-making theodicy, that there may be a purpose in suffering. And Bart Ehrman, but for all his academic qualities, had a very emotional reaction to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't like that. He said that to me is a sort of, you know, horrible idea. Didn't really engage, if I'm honest, with the actual argument, but just sort of dismissed it out of hand because he didn't like the feeling of it. And I think that's the way a lot of people are about the problem of suffering, is it is an emotional issue, and so they will have an emotional reaction to it.
Yeah, I think you were saying that I said something in response to that. I'm sure I did, but I can't remember what it was.
Well, it was, I remember you got in touch saying, essentially, I have had experience of suffering, and I know you have, Nick, in your life, but that doesn't stop me believing in God, and I think and you were essentially coming in to support Swinburne, to say, you know, Bart seemed to respond badly to Swinburne on this issue, but the fact is Swinburne was just making a rational case, that you have to listen to that. You shouldn't just discount it just because you don't like the sound of it. And I think you sort of shared some of your own story of having medical struggles and things in your life, and how you managed to come to a fairly rational understanding of why those things might be. And I think that's quite, you're sort of unique in that sense, Nick. You're among those sort of friends of mine who I see as having an ability to think very rationally about what are often emotional issues, even if you're going through those things yourself.
Usually whenever Allie and I are out in public somewhere and something comes up with a topic about Asperger's, like we were at the Build-A-Bear store recently and they have the Autism Speaks Bear there. And so I'm very quick to point out, my wife and I, we're both on the spectrum, and when we meet someone who's in the projects field, I say, if you ever meet someone who's on the spectrum and they need someone to talk to, please let them know that we're out there, such because it's kind of like I want us to, what we have in fact because we're so different, and we both were at one time seen as a bad thing, think Ali still sees it as a bad thing for her, but ultimately we also know that it came with a lot of good because it brought us together.
Absolutely, and that's what I'd say as well is your story and your perspective as I've read it and we've engaged a couple of times over the years has helped me to see things from a different perspective. I mean, it was interesting also to hear from Hugh Ross when he was over last year with me, the fact that he sort of came to see that not so long ago that he was on the autistic spectrum himself.
Yep.
And yes, that has its drawbacks at one level, I'm sure you could testify to, but it also lends a certain sort of ability to, well, in his case, in your case, think through things in a slightly different way, and
yep.
You know, to take an approach to a subject which can be, on the one hand, sort of feel maybe a bit dispassionate, but at the same time is quite helpful for sometimes getting through some of the emotional stuff that tends to cloud our judgment sometimes on certain issues.
We're going to go and take our final break. Come back. We're going to be wrapping things up with Justin Browdy of Premier Christian Radio. We'll be back after this break.
This is Mike Licona. Nick Peters is my son-in-law, and I'm excited to announce his new podcast in which Nick will discuss and have guests on topics related to Christian apologetics and dealing with disabilities. Nick has already interviewed apologetic stars such as Greg Kokel and Rob Bowman, and I know of other stars he's in the process of inviting. So be sure to check out Nick's new podcast.
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And I'd like to remind people, if you want to donate, please do. Blog Talk Radio is listener support, and Deeper Waters is supported by people like you. And I'd like to remind you that, I'll just tell you since I haven't said so thus far, that next week we are going to be discussing back at our regular time with Calvin E. Beisner, and we will be talking about Christians and environmentalism. E. Calvin Beisner is president of the Cornwall Alliance for Stewardship of Creation, so we're going to be discussing what's a Christian response to environmentalism, and how should a Christian truly be an environmentalist, which could be an interesting show for you to have sometime, Justin.
Yeah, I've had a few people suggest that. It's always tricky to know exactly what subjects to take up, and I don't want to just become a general discussion show, although there are all kinds of interesting issues you could discuss. I've always wanted to make sure that the focus stays on apologetics and debates between Christians and non-Christians primarily. But we do those, as I say, shows which take us into areas of general interest sometimes, and sometimes they're the most popular. I had a debate with Rob Bell, came in recently, who, has caused some controversy in the Christian church in the last couple of years, and debated his view of God with Andrew Wilson, a young Christian theologian here in the UK. And, we put a video of their discussion on homosexuality online, and it's been extremely popular. It's sort of, because it's something Christians want to hear about. They want to hear what Rob Bell has to say on that and how he got responded to and that kind of thing. So there's a place for that, but I do like to sort of try to keep the subject matter generally within the purview of apologetics.
Mm-hmm. get back to the conference a little bit. You know, some year I know I'd love to attend and such, but you know, England, it costs quite a bit for me to fly over there if I wanted to do that sometime.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I've had a few requests that we take the conference to the States. So who knows what the future could hold, Nick? Maybe you wouldn't have to travel so far if that were the case.
That'd be great. You know, you can always consider coming to, I don't know, maybe Knoxville, Tennessee, and doing the But let's suppose we've got some listeners here in America who do have some funds to spare. If you do, please consider making a donation to Deeper Waters. But if they do, is it too late for them to attend the conference?
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to fly out from the States and attend the conference, you'd be more than welcome. But the conference material will be available afterwards. We've done a DVD the last 2 years after the conference. Mm-hmm. Actually, rather exclusively, I can reveal on your radio show, Nick, that we're not doing a DVD for this one. Rather, we're going to be making all the resources available eventually online, so that we get a really broad spread of these materials being made available for free.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. I'll obviously be announcing on the show how people can get hold of all the resources once the conference is over. It takes a little time to put together the videos and that kind of thing, but we'll do that and then we'll release it.
Well, let's suppose someone does want to go to a conference, and I wouldn't be surprised if I did have a few UK listeners as well. If they want to attend the conference, what are the details, when, where, how much?
Okay, so if you are interested in coming, it's just a week away, Saturday the 25th of May in central London. You can find all the details at the website. That's premier.org.uk/Jesus is the easiest one to remember, probably. premier.org.uk/Jesus. And you can book yourself in there. You can find out more information, but you can also book your ticket on the website there. We've got a special offer as well of last year's conference on DVD for free if you book two or more tickets. So that's worth doing if you're thinking of bringing a friend or something. So that's the place to go. We've still got tickets available, and we'd love to see anyone who wants to come along, who may be listening now and wondering about what to do with their bank holiday weekend. We have these things in the UK called bank holiday weekend. I don't know if you get the same thing in the States.
Nope.
Nick, but it's basically every so often during the year there's a long weekend here where traditionally, it's been the Monday after the weekend has been a holiday for banks, though it's kind of across the board. Lots of shops don't open on this particular day, but that is now part of the culture. And so bank holiday weekends tend to be a weekend when people will go away and do things and that kind of thing. So it's there's one coming up, and if you're thinking of what to do with your Saturday on your bank holiday weekend, then come to Unbelievable, the conference 2013 in London. I'd be delighted to meet you, and I'm sure you'll have an excellent time and learn an awful lot in the process.
Mm-hmm. Now, you talk about what you're going to be doing next year, which kind of gets into what I want to wrap things up in. What is the future of Unbelievable? Can you give us any hints at what's coming up and where you're going from here?
Well, we're continuing to try to, you know, bring some of the best speakers in on both sides of the issues of Christianity, atheism, and other religions together. I've had thoughts of, we've had quite a focus for a number of years now on the atheist-Christian dialogue, and maybe it's time to do a little bit more in the area of other religions, which I think is really important here in the UK. We are a very pluralist society. So we may see more of that on the radio show. As I mentioned, I've just had a few hints recently that maybe we should be doing more public debates, discussions, and that kind of thing. So be looking at possibly doing more of that in the future as well, in a public setting. There's all kinds of things I'd love to do, to be honest, Nick. And the only thing that stops me is time. And
yeah.
Manpower, really. I'm a sort of one-man show, really. And so it's as much as I can do to run the show, do the conference, do the other bits that I do for my job, look after our children and be part of the church that my wife runs, you know, that kind of keeps me very busy. So it's one of those things where all sorts of ideas, but, you know, I'd love to be able to make happen. You just sort of have to take them one at a time and do what's possible. But I really enjoy it, and it is a passion of mine. And you will be seeing more from the Unbelievable brand in the future.
Yeah, I remember when we had Kurt on here last week, and kind of get to what you were talking about, that time is such a limitation, because when I started this podcast, I was kind of wondering, I wonder if I'm going to find enough people who are willing to come on to fill in the time. And now that I'm starting getting people, I'm kind of saying, we'll have to get you in sometime in the fall this year, because we're thoroughly booked up to this point, and it largely is a one-man production here. And when I was talking to Kurt, and he's talking about Ratio Christi, and I said, yeah, I do part of that. And then you do your blog, says, yeah, I'm with that. And aren't you with Reasonable Faith? Yeah, I do that. And Reasons to Believe? Yes, I'm part of that. Is there anything you're not doing right now? It is true that time is what limits you. I mean, you got to manage the time. And still, I try and be here for my wife. I drive her around everywhere. It's nothing I complain about at all. It's something that I enjoy doing. I help her out with anything that I can, and still try and take some private time for myself and time to get in the study. But it's just a wild ride. But still, and all that, always make time for Unbelievable.
Well, I really appreciate you doing that, Nick, and I've appreciated your input over the years. You know, you've given me lots of ideas for shows, and you've always been very helpful in pointing out, you know, some of the issues that have come up in the shows and that kind of thing. And you've introduced me to some really interesting people over the years who you've suggested I should have on and that kind of thing. So you've definitely been an important part of the show in a background kind of way, in all kinds of different ways. So, it's been great. And I've really appreciated the way that you've also encouraged other people to get involved with the show as well, which has been really good.
Yeah, and you know, some people might be saying, well, you're on Blog Talk Radio and you're promoting another program. Like, yeah, we got promos to promote our shows, but at the same time, what I'd tell people is, Justin and I, we might have different stations, we might have different programs, but we're essentially on the same side.
And, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. And I don't think there's any harm in, for me, doing, you know, speaking on other radio stations, other people's things, and having them speak on mine, because it's all part of a bigger picture. You know, we can't be too precious about our own niche, or we'd never get anything done. Absolutely. If we have to, you know, do what it says in scripture and work together as one body, even if we've got different uses and functions. You know, we're all part of the same body.
And what my listeners can get from you is that we should be praying for our friends across the pond, just like we hope you across the pond are praying for us over here. But I hope some of my listeners are getting out of this today, is that despite what some I used to think, it's not a total waste, man. The church can
absolutely
still grow and thrive.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And as you've rightly pointed out, there are real areas of growth. There are things that are really worth, you know, that we think are really, really exciting here in the UK. Do pray for us, though, because the church needs your prayers, and we want to see the UK transformed. We want to see God move again in this country. And, you know, we have a fantastic heritage in the UK of Christian thinking and Christian witness, which has really slipped away in the last century or so. But we don't believe that that's the end of the story. And we do believe that God will raise up a church even out of the ashes that can really speak to this nation. And I'm trying to do my little bit in my little area of that. I'm one among a number of workers in the vineyard, as it were, and But there's much that can be achieved when we do work together. So we're very hopeful, really. That I don't find a lot. You know, in some parts of the UK church, you'll find some pessimism. But actually, a lot of the places I look and speak to, there's a lot of hope and a lot of joy and a lot of potential for growth.
Something I was discussing with Kurt last week is, I think that we are on the verge of a golden age of apologetics. And I really think this is a strong chance that the church could rise up when times are bleakest and we've got more information than we've ever had out there before and more ways of getting it out there than we've ever had before to demonstrate Christian truth claims.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think as well, it's easier than ever to access that with the age of the internet. And just as obviously it makes atheists all the more easy for them to spread and to be a community, Christians are realizing that there's so much we can do as well on that front. Mm-hmm. So I'm always amazed at just in the last couple of decades how much Christian apologetics has come into its own in all kinds of new ways. I really do feel that you know Christians have the best answers to the, the big questions. I'm often asked, sometimes by atheists, sometimes by Christians, having done Unbelievable for several years now, how have you not lost your faith, Justin, after all these debates with atheists and skeptics and things? And it's very simple, because I've never heard an argument that I don't think there's a good answer to.
Yep.
My faith is far more robust now than it was when I began, and that's because I just have never had any reason to doubt that Christianity can stand up for itself. There will be kind of peaks and troughs in that journey. There might be hard questions that you come across and think, oh, how am I? But no, yeah, it's my experience is that there is a really robust foundation for this faith that I inhabit, and I just want to show other people that that's the case. I'll keep doing that as long as I can.
Well, I'm very thankful that you're doing, and you're doing a darn good job of it over there. But we've got less than 3 minutes left, so let's wrap this up. What final words would you like to leave for my listening audience?
Well, I'd like to thank you, Nick, for having me on the program. It's been great fun to spend a couple of hours chatting with you. I guess for your listeners, I would encourage them to do apologetics, yes, but to actually do it in the context of speaking open-handedly with people who don't share your opinion, and don't be afraid of doing that. In fact, the more you do it, the less scary it becomes. And there's no need to become sort of antagonistic when we do that. We just accept that God can work even in situations where we think someone can't possibly be receptive to the gospel. Time and again, I've seen people who have had come on a long way in ways that you weren't expecting in a journey. And so go out there, do your best, be Christian, but be a thinking Christian, and it will get you far.
Okay, well, my guest has been Justin Browley, the Unbelievable, on Premier Christian Radio, and my great thanks to him for coming on. This is a show I was really looking forward to, because as you all have guessed, Unbelievable is one of my favorite podcasts. Next week, we'll be having E. Calvin Beisner showing up. We'll be talking about environmentalism and how are Christians supposed to be an environmentalist without being what we would call an environmentalist wacko type. So, we'll be here next week, and I urge you to listen to Unbelievable as well and be listening to us. So, once again, thanks to Justin for coming on, and I'm Nick Peters, and I'm signing off.